Thank you for downloading this podcast from policyreview.tv.
Thanks, Michael. Morning, delegates, both those of you who are present and those of you who are in cyberspace somewhere. I've been asked to talk to you for about 10 minutes today on the subject of understanding new models of service delivery and its impact on effective governance. This will be quite a difficult task for someone who's quite a lot to say on the subject, and although I'm more Lancashire than Lanarkshire these days, please give me a shout if I'm going too fast and tell me to slow down a bit. We all know that many local authorities are considering alternative models of service delivery that exist as part of their ongoing plans to deal with the sort of financial austerity that we face over the coming years. Whether these models are full-blown outsourcing, joint ventures, wholly owned or arm's-length companies, leisure trusts, social enterprises, co-ops or mutuals, issues that should be close to the top of any list when weighing up the pros and cons of each option are governance and accountability, as far as I'm concerned. I'll try and attempt to explore these issues across the broad spectrum of arrangements that I've referred to. One fundamental lesson learned by many local authorities over the last decade or two is that the more contractualised a service delivery mechanism is, the less governance and local democratic accountability you will have over it. On a separate point, this does not necessarily absolve you of blame if things go wrong. I only need to think back to last winter when local authorities were getting a roasting from the media and public alike for not responding quickly enough in Gritton Roads, despite the fact that in some instances responsibility for those roads had been outsourced for over a decade. The public still viewed it as the local authority's responsibility. However, even in the most contractualised arrangements, a subtle degree of control and influence can be built in from the outset through founding articles and instruments, leases, grants and golden shares. You can build in issues around corporate aims and objectives on economic and environmental matters, whilst also retaining a say over any future changes to documentation or boards. Although one of the key issues in any such arrangement is ensuring proper democratic scrutiny and accountability remains. There is a mood that because of the complexity of the procurement process, it has effectively disenfranchised many elected members and left officers with the help of external business advisers to run that process. When you consider that Deanne Julius placed a value in excess of $80 billion on the public services outsourcing market in her report of a couple of years ago, and she estimated that was likely to rise to $100 billion by 2012, surely this has got to be a bad thing for democracy. I think we need to remember that one person's bureaucracy is another person's democracy. So how can elected members retain a degree of governance, democratic accountability, scrutiny and overview in this world? Well, when it's a fully outsourced contract, your best chance is through having a clearly defined specification from the outset, which spells out the issues which will be subject to future contract monitoring, such as implementation of corporate aims and objectives, transaction and monitoring costs, service performance standards, equalities issues for staff and users alike, price increases, any reductions in control or flexibility, and environmental performance standards. With the Localism Act recently passing into law, as the Baroness has mentioned, the right to challenge may lead to further fragmentation of services through a variety of different approaches, including social enterprise, mutuals and cooperatives. And one of the things that I would ask when you talk about governance and accountability is, in the current financial climate, is it really the right time to be handing public funds over to small groups of individuals without any recourse or any ongoing scrutiny? APSE, the association I work for, Association for Public Service Excellence, their recent research with De Montfort University in co-ops and mutuals, proof of delivery, surveyed more than 1,600 sources and found a lack of impact evaluation evidence as to the benefits for this model for local service delivery. Whilst there was some evidence of a reduction in democratic accountability with such models, we also found that some of the critical factors for success were around contract lock-in for a period of time to protect the fledgling body from predators, ongoing support from the parent body through public subsidy, advocacy and expert advice, and that there also needs to be buy-in from staff, elected members, citizens and service users. Of course, many authorities have been shying away from wholesale outsourcing as a result of the immediacy of cuts and the length of time large-scale procurement exercises take to deliver. Horror stories like Southern Cross haven't helped either. Some, however, have looked towards wholly owned companies to give themselves the reassurance that if things go wrong, they can still bring the service back in-house. Despite this, representatives of the council who sit on these boards of these organisations are legally bound to act in the interests of the organisation rather than the council. It is therefore of vital importance to get the heads of terms correct when setting up any such company and decide carefully who's actually best placed to sit on such a board in order that they don't have to declare a conflict of interest on key policy decisions back within the council. Looking to another model that sits somewhere in between, like a leisure trust. As a council, you may want to establish such a vehicle, so in order to game the system, as I would phrase it, by the leisure trust receiving mandatory relief from NNDR, National Non-Domestic Rates, as a charitable body. You probably want the vehicle to be compatible with the future strategic direction of the local authority, and therefore wish to strike a balance between commerciality and social policy provision, as well as a balance between council control and maintaining the degree of independence necessary to receive NNDR relief. In practice, this suggests that council involvement at board level should be kept to below 20%, which really means that in the normal size of a board, no more than one elected member or council officer can act as a trustee. Therefore, the council will want to retain its influence by keeping responsibility for overall strategy for recreation and leisure and ensuring that the trust is tied into the pursuit of the strategy through its constitution and conditions attached to its grants, leases or operating contract. So to conclude on the issue I've been asked to cover then, understand the new models of service delivery and their impact on effective governance. New models of service delivery undoubtedly reduce the degree of direct control that elected members and their senior officers they employ have over the services that are provided to their communities. However, this is not new. It's happened over a long period of time and may continue to expand in the future. The key is ensuring that you retain as much influence as possible over the levers of control through contract specification, the founding documentation of the vehicle, any grants or leases, and the monitoring and scrutiny of the implementation of the business case through the delivery of the business plan. Looking to the future, it's likely that local government will have a whole variety of arrangements when it comes to service delivery. Will elected members have a significant level of influence and control in this brave new world, or will they be reduced to the role of the favourite old uncle at family gatherings who regales everyone with tales of the good old days whilst no one really pays too much attention to them? Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from policyreview.tv. For more details, go to www.policyreview.tv. Please note that this audio is subject to copyright and cannot be used by other broadcasters or for commercial gain.